So I'm Rick Hansen, and it's August 29th, 2012. And I want to share with you about a topic and engage it with you that is, I think, very fundamental to life, to living with others, working with others, participating in this world. As I think about it, managing our reactions to the political process altogether. And it's summarized under the headline of, remember that life is hard for others and yourself. That's the headline. To start, a little story. I got this story from a friend of mine and teacher, Tara Brock, and here's how the story goes. Imagine that you are walking somewhere, perhaps you're in the woods, and by the way, something actually did happen, as I recall now, very much like this for me. And you hear a dog barking. You go over to where the dog is, and you like dogs, you're friendly, you wonder what it's doing there, it doesn't look that happy, and you get close to it to try to help it, and suddenly it lunges at you, snarling and biting and, you know, snapping, barking, and you leap back. And all these reactions arise in you. The ingratitude of the dog. You're a dog, I'm a human, I'm atop the food chain. You know, or whatever, you know, alarm, just automatic, you know, to strike back. It's something that makes us frightened. So much anger, of course, is rooted in fear. And then when you look more closely, what do you see? You see that that dog has its paw stuck in some kind of trap. Maybe under a rock, maybe a hunter's trap. Something has happened and the dog is stuck there. And suddenly, what would happen to your reactions? Yeah, they would change quite quickly, wouldn't they? Maybe you would have reactions to your reactions. You know, you might chasten yourself, or you might, you know, or scold yourself, or you might realize, you know, okay, how I felt when the dog jumped at me and started barking and snapping, that's sort of normal. It's okay. That's hard for me. But on the heels of that would come probably what? Some compassion for the dog? Some caring for it? Some understanding. You would put it in perspective. You would understand, oh, okay, that dog is acting that way because life is hard for it. And that makes all the difference in the world. Suddenly we're less upset. We're more able to see the problem in a practical way. Like, okay, now what do I do? I can't get too close. The dog will bite me. How do I work with this right now? How do I deal with this right now? Maybe my best practical stance is to do nothing, but to step out of being in any way, shape, or form a threat for the dog. Or some form of practical problem solving. So right now, I invite you to think about a recent episode in your life where you felt bothered by someone, irritated, could be quite small. I'll tell you one of my stories very momentarily. It's a small thing, but it kind of holds everything in it. So think for yourself, a little moment recently where someone got on your nerves, you felt hassled, treated unfairly, offended, alarmed. You got one? And then ask yourself, okay, without letting anybody off the hook, without getting complicated about it, how is life difficult for that other person? Take a moment to reflect on that. In particular, how might life be difficult in ways that were causes of how that other person was or is? Life's difficult in lots of ways, including the inherent difficulty of inhabiting a dying body. subject to pain, illness, aging, wrinkling, sagging, drooping. I'm going to quote Camille, I think her last name is pronounced Paglia. She's a brilliant feminist intellectual, and I hope you'll forgive me this analogy or this line. She says, "Men enter in triumph and withdraw in decrepitude." Decrepitude is our fate, locally and ultimately. So anyway, and then also, what's it like? Life is hard in the ways that, in some subtle sense, most people have some kind of intuition of being trapped in form, slow, sluggish, congealed, conditioned form, with some intuition of that which is free, unconditioned, spacious, conscious, as sort of our fundamental nature, and yet we feel estranged from it in some subtle way. We've lost our home. So there's a kind of homesickness, as it were, that is innate to congealed material existence. If you relate to that, great. If you don't relate to it, it's fine too. But I think for many people, there's that subtle sense of estrangement, loss, and longing that's implicit in the ways that life is difficult, even when they're, sitting on their motorboat drinking Mai Tais. So what happens inside you if you appreciate that this other person that was difficult for you is experiencing that life is difficult? Anybody want to share an example? It's okay if you don't. Tell you a little story myself. So I'm dealing with this little emerging issue in my world, my business world, and it involves a situation where I'm doing X over here and Y over here, which to me seem quite different, and the people involved with me doing X over here suddenly realized I was also doing Y over there and are seemingly troubled by it, with a kind of critical tone, a little bit of how dare you do Y. I thought we had an exclusive, in some sense, for you to do X, right? And for me, X and Y are so distinct, they're not possibly competitive. It just never occurred to me that the people involved would, in some ways, take offense or be prepared or on the road to taking offense that I'm doing Y because they thought they had me for X. Okay. So I wrote an email, and I put real effort into the email. It took me about 45 minutes to write. I take unwarranted pride in my emails. 45 minutes is a chunk of time I could have put elsewhere. And so I just sent out this email. I copied myself, knowing my wife would see it. And she's very aware of my business processes. And she knows the players in this particular X and Y scenario. And in my email, my long, well-crafted, highly polished, very intelligent, careful, thoughtful, warm-hearted, detailed email was one phrase in which I drop in a kind of subordinate detail to support this point I'm making. She, catcher of all husbandly errors, points out that this detail was probably actually not true. I thought it was true. But she points out it's probably not true. Game on. Right? In that moment, game on. So I write back this fairly snappy email, I double down on the detail. Well, I was told it was true. Besides, it's peripheral. Drop in, a SAT word there. And so pause, stop, step back. Have any of you ever done anything like this? On either side? wife, husband, either side. Okay. Or think about the people who are doing the X. They're alarmed to discover I'm suddenly doing Y. It feels like a threat to them, like it might draw attention from X, might draw customers, resources, money from X over to Y, you know? Life's difficult over here. Life's difficult for my wife. She's kind of alarmed that I said something that wasn't true. I'm offended and also worried. Uh-oh, I said something that wasn't true. That could be the thread that unravels the whole garment, you know? Right? Life is difficult right there. I feel pressed. 45 minutes is a real chunk of time to invest in a single email for me. Uh-oh, fault. Because of the negativity bias, of course, we always notice the loose thread, right? We don't notice the whole beautiful shirt. It's the one loose thread. It's the one little tile that's off in the bathroom, right? It's the one, it's the hair floating in the soup. It's a really good soup. It's just one hair. It probably got boiled too. Suddenly now the soup's contaminated, right? See, life is difficult. And yet if you appreciate how, okay, for the exes, my wife, for me, it's the difficulty of the life, of life, that's really putting fuel on the fire, then we can lighten up about it. And in particular, for starters, to see that life is difficult for others. And of course, it's not just for humans that it's difficult for. You know, I was sort of sitting there, I don't know if you had a fly buzzing around you at all. Maybe it was the fly that was also buzzing around me. And I had this moment of just reflecting on how life's hard to be a fly, right? Or to be an animal raised for food, or an animal in the wild that's living on the edge of hunger much of the time. Life's hard. So when we recognize the truth that life is difficult for others, just factually, not letting them off the hook, not excusing them, but just simply being in touch with that truth. Something, I don't know about you, but I bet it's true for you, something shifts in the heart. We feel softer. We feel less troubled ourselves. In a funny way, recognize how life is difficult for them is good for us, because you can notice it. You suddenly feel a little more at ease with it. You see the bigger picture. It's less personal. Maybe you can find kind of the humor in it. Maybe you slow down in your reactions. You think twice before you push send, right? This kind of a fantasy that somehow we could crawl into the box where we put the letter, but once you hit send on an email, it is gone, right? Yeah.
I recommend for every really important email that you put it in your draft file.
Yeah.
And revisit it many times before you press the send button.
Yeah, that's wisdom right there. Do you have any comments so far about what I'm saying? About seeing how life is difficult for others, including oneself and oneself.
Store is in downtown. So one evening, I'm almost dark. I walk from his store down over the river, down on the berm, back to my room. As I almost got there, a homeless person came running down the berm and yelled at me, "Let's do the elbow thing." walking and I ignored him. And seconds were going by. And he said it again. Let's do the elbow. At first I had no idea what that is. I looked at him, and he was going like this.
Yeah.
You know, like that. And I also saw his face and his stance. And then by that time, maybe 5 or 6 seconds had gone by. And I realized that I wasn't going to run. I slowed my walk down. So I'm a fairly fast walker. I slowed down. And I took in, here's a homeless person, possibly self-medicating, whatever else, looking for a little bit of contact. And I stopped. And I kind of waited for myself to get there instead of run. And that took about another 2 seconds. And then I said, okay, let's do it. And we touched elbows like that. And he said, all right, brother. And I said, same. And then he was off and I was off. And I love how I got from fear to contact. I was slightly disappointed that it took 10 seconds because it might have hurt him in those 10 seconds. But I needed those 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Seeing how life is difficult for the fellow running toward you, and also life is difficult for oneself. You know. Yeah.
I'll tell a much tamer story. I have a professional in my life who visits me occasionally. And at the last visit, about 2.5 months ago, there was a promise that there would be another visit this summer. And of course, the many weeks have passed and no contact. So I sent an email which asked whether I had frightened him away because I hadn't heard. And of course, that was a smart-ass email.
Not that you would ever
never
be that way.
And 2 weeks elapsed with no reply, so I was certain that I had hurt feelings, not inadvertently. And so I sent a second email in which I indicated that I wondered if there had been real trouble, either in his professional life or in his personal life. And within 48 hours, I had a response, thank you so much for reminding me that I need to visit with you again, and making a date right on the spot. So my second response, obviously, initiated the right feelings back and forth.
Yeah.
And that was a learning experience for me, because my immediate response was always the smart-ass, aggressive one, which may or may not be suitable all the time.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. So I think to see the way that life is difficult for the other person, in each of your cases, it's to slow down enough to see the big picture. It might mean taking a couple of tries, but it's to pause and to open to see what's really happening here. It's a dog whose paw is stuck in a trap. It's, you know, a homeless person who just is hungry for contact. It's somebody else, maybe there's some issue in their life. It's my wife, it's me. You know, you just kind of slow down. So that's one. It's to slow down to recognize the truth that life is difficult for that person. I think a second thing is to allow ourselves to be able to tolerate the feelings that come up when we recognize that life is hard for another person or ourselves. You know, there's a phrase in psychology called distress tolerance. There are probably two major factors that really underpin the majority of psychological issues, sort of particularly the final common pathway of factors in terms of the last stage, if you will. And the two factors are poor distress tolerance and negative rumination. So if you can interrupt negative rumination and enable yourself to be more able to tolerate, typically through mindful awareness, which is a fantastic resource in self-soothing and self-compassion and activating a felt sense of being cared about by others. If you can do that, then you can really tolerate what we feel when we look at someone and we can see, particularly if there's someone we care about, that life is difficult for them. Or maybe especially if there's someone we're developing a case against. And then when we see that life is difficult for them, it really undoes our case against that other person. And we have to feel what we feel when the case falls away. The third thing is to recognize how we are joined with them. You know, there's a kind of universality to realizing that life is difficult. And you may have heard this story. Basically, supposedly, it's a kind of a joke story. It's a puzzle. Some archaeologists found this incredibly ancient ruin. I mean, as ancient as it gets. And there were two perfectly preserved human bodies in it, male and female. And one of the archaeologists just glanced at the naked bodies there, kind of lying on their backs, just perfectly preserved. The faces very still and quiet. And one archaeologist just glanced at both of them and said, "Oh my gosh, this is Adam and Eve." How did the archaeologist know? You may know the story, yes? Right, no belly buttons, no navel, no born of a woman, as it were, no navel. And we're all joined at the navel in a fundamental sense. Virginia Satir, no longer alive, the great family therapist, one and great person, would talk about this, how we're fundamentally joined by the navel. We're all born, we all die, we all live, meanwhile, dependently upon so many things. You know, we have a navel. And when you can see that life is difficult for that other person, you know, it takes you into some of the universals. Worry, weariness. Walking down the street, you see the weariness, the stress, the strain in other people. You see it in your own face. You can see it in my face. I've had a very fortunate life. You can still see it in my face. I can see it in the face of my own teachers. No way around it. So that's another way into this recognition of the ways that life's difficult for the other person. And then I find for myself, particularly if you're caught in a specific situation, to ask yourself, what could be specifically difficult for this particular person right now? Including, how am I part of their difficulty? Maybe not, but just getting particular about it. So I invite you to think about maybe a different situation where someone's bugging you, or you're in there's some kind of tension, or you're working something out, or maybe there's a family member there's been a long-standing wrangle with, or maybe a relationship kind of ended on poor terms. Maybe there's someone you like, but you're ambivalent about because it feels like there's sort of an ongoing tussle between you, one kind or another. And so I'm going to invite you to think about two things. Take about a minute here. One thing is, what could be difficult? How could life be difficult for that person that is a factor in how they're acting, how they're being? So we'll just pause for some seconds about that. And then here's the second question, which is there any way that you could ease their difficulty? That would be appropriate. Not walking on eggshells, not waiving your rights, not exposing yourself in an unsafe way. But is there any opportunity to ease their difficulty, including perhaps simply being less fiery yourself, less positional, less attached to a view, less rapid in your way of being, less coming at them with such intensity, or what? Is there any way you could help their life be less difficult, particularly in a way that might ease this trouble between you. Maybe to help that person's life be less difficult, particularly in such a way to ease the trouble between you, you might need to come to terms with how life is difficult for you. And through coming to terms in some ways with how life might be difficult for you, it might help you be less of a difficulty, as it were, for that other person. There's often a kind of taboo against admitting how life is difficult for us. I think especially in America, especially in the West, as if it's a personal shame or failing to say, yeah, life is hard, or these parts of life are real hard. They're difficult. And I'm not winning on all fronts. And yet, it's the truth of things. And if we don't admit it, and in some ways come to terms with it, and do what we can about it, then we continue to be difficult for other people. There's a deep dignity in admitting how life is difficult without shame. There's no shame in the fact that life is difficult for everyone with a navel. How many of you have a navel? So many of you don't have a navel. That's amazing. Okay. Any comments so far about those two questions? You know, how might their difficulty be a factor, and is there anything you could do to ease their difficulties? Great. Arietta.
I've been in a sort of tussle or difficult situation with a very good friend of mine. And, you know, I've been trying to be a good person.
Yeah.
It actually did help. I was surprised.
That's great. Thank you. That's great. Great. So what do you see about, you know, like how life is difficult for other people? How could that be helpful? Do you see?
It made it clear.
Do you do see how life is difficult for other people?
Yeah.
Right? You do see that? Okay, I'm just tuning in. That I haven't totally lost it here. Okay, good. Yeah, Bev, go on.
I think that clarifying something, I can remember having to make a response to a person that's in my life that there seems to be sometimes a grainy, and it's been a grainy friendship, so it hasn't been one of long term, it's probably been deep, but not long term. And I had to send, I did it by email. I wanted the words written, what I was saying, of how I was responding to something that had been said that did not feel right to me. In fact, it felt very wrong. It didn't fit in with any of my philosophies, theologies, or anything. I was really clear of what it was. It was hard for me to be that honest because it was really direct, but it seemed really fair to speak exactly what the issue was and where it had gotten off center.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's what you did with your email. There was something about the being really clear instead of avoidance. Avoidance is a nice way to step out. But once I was clear, then it was easier for me to just move on. Sometimes we have to just let go.
Right.
I think I did it in a clear way.
Yeah.
The chicken way.
I get that. It's great. And I'm really zeroed in on the recognition of the suffering of the other person.
Mm-hmm.
That particular element. Not so much how we are skillfully assertive about it, but that bare recognition of how life is difficult for that other person. So I'm wondering about tracking that part of it. Yeah, Blythe?
My attitude.
It
first started off when someone would cut me off or I feel snubbed and everybody seems so stressed when they're driving, and I, instead of taking it personally, I realized, that person, who knows what happened to that person an hour ago, a day ago. Maybe their child was diagnosed with cancer, maybe their spouse walked out. And I don't know, it's just really, it gives me space to remain peaceful and compassionate.
Yeah.
One, to stay safe, and the two, physically safe and spiritually safe.
Yeah.
And that it's a much bigger experience than we often acknowledge.
Right. Great. Thank you. How about other people? Great.
You've talked often about the causes and the conditions upstream.
Yeah.
And so I hold that when I see people that may be acting in such a way that the other day somebody I think was heading for the squirrel. It was like, run, squirrel, run. And this car was just kind of going at him, and it just broke my heart. And, what are the causes and conditions of that person that they felt that they really needed to do that? And so I had compassion for not only the squirrel, but for the driver. And, that driver must be really hurrying inside to behave that way. That's how I try to hold people who behave in such ways that I think are harmful to themselves or others.
Right. Right. Good. Yeah, thank you. That's a good example, too, of recognizing how life is difficult for that other person. Starting there. Taking a moment to start there. How life is hard for that other person. I mean, what I'm experiencing humbly is how I moved into my email that was skillful, I think, truthfully, and careful, and almost entirely focused on establishing my own position in the matter. And really only almost after I sent it, feeling into the ways in which the other players, the ex folks, were sort of alarmed or threatened and competitive, and they were worried. And they worried about having enough money in life or whatever, status, standing, territoriality. So it's interesting to ask ourselves, how often do we really fully complete the trajectory of recognizing how life is difficult for the other person before mounting our own response? Right. That's kind of what I'm talking about. I'm talking about staying with the recognition of suffering, which does go to the first noble truth of Buddhism, obviously. That's what we're really talking about here, the recognition of the truth of suffering. The ways that for that person, right now, right here, I mean, honestly, you can look at me and I can look at each one of you. And I bet if we look at each other for about 2 to 3 seconds straight, we can intuit some sense of a difficulty, a way in which life sits like a load of bricks on the shoulders of that other person. How hard is it to do that, you know? And many of us, like, you don't know me terribly well, I don't know you terribly well, I know your face, but we can see in each other's face the truth of that suffering, of that difficulty. Yeah.
Can I ask you just a clarification of your term, life is difficult?
Yeah.
Because if I was to think about some people, I don't perceive their life difficult, and that doesn't matter what I perceive, but they don't even perceive that their life is difficult. So that it sounds as though you're saying life circumstances are difficult, their life circumstances, but really what you're saying is being human.
Living is difficult.
Yeah.
Being. Yeah. Or there's always something. You know what I mean? You know the old line, basically, if a being is always happy and will eat anything and, you know, is very cheerful and immediately forgets all affronts, it's a dog. You know, that old line. And for humans, life is difficult and we're surrounded by difficulty. And it, no? We're surrounded by stress, by strain, by pace. We're living in a way that's utterly at odds with the evolutionary template. I mean, there's a lot. People have things on their mind. They're worried. They're a little irritated. They're still dealing with the impact of their childhood upbringing. I mean, it's not hard to look. You don't have to look very far to see what is a way in which there's something that's difficult, there's something that's challenging, there's something that's stressful, there's something that's not quite right. You know, the original, you may know this term for suffering in Buddhism, dukkha, the roots of that word have to do with the meeting of an axle and a wheel that's not quite right. In other words, it's a kind of wobbly grinding. The wheel is spinning, but it's not perfectly balanced. That's life. In other words, life is friction. Friction is dukkha. It's that wobbly grinding. Who among us is not aware of some wobbly grinding within oneself? Well, hello, excuse me, how many of you have a navel? You know, if we got a navel, if we got a wobbly grinding, how many of you experienced the wobbly grinding going through life? If you got the wobbly grinding, they got the wobbly grinding. And it's then starting with a recognition of that. And so I'll take that and then I'll say a last thing, we'll wrap up. Yeah.
Safety.
Yeah.
In most cases, and that was connected otherwise to the navel.
Yeah. Sure, and you could say that's even part of the difficulty in living independently outside the womb. You know, we've had some, it's like feeling cast out from Eden in some subtle way. A loss of innocence or a loss of some sense of union or possibility. And often, the difficulty we can discern in the other person we're in some wrangle with is much grosser than that. It's not about some subtle estrangement from the divine, right? It's because they're riding the hormonal roller coaster, or they're worried about their kid, right? Or they're working too hard, they're not eating well, they're not getting enough sleep. They're headed for their annual checkup and they're worried about it. It's tax season. They're real troubled by the economy, the political scene, the fact that humans are dumping almost 1 billion tons a day of carbon into the atmosphere. That's like 500 million automobiles up into the sky every day, most of which stay up there. They got a few things on their mind, right? And then, so it's to finish up here, what happens to our heart when we actually recognize in a simple way how life is difficult for someone, how they're worried about something or irritated or positional or possessive, or they feel a sense of scarcity or they don't feel as loved. How many people feel in their bones utterly loved? How many people feel in their bones utterly worthy? Good. How many people feel in their bones, you know, utterly, I guess, fundamentally peaceful and undisturbed no matter what happens to them? And that's not that common. There are some, but it's not that common. Right? That's a way in which life is difficult for some. So, to finish up, I can say for myself that the simplicity of this recognition and practice, remember that life is difficult for people, including oneself, or that living is difficult for others and for oneself. It's a very immediate practice. There you are, standing in line. Look around. Life is difficult. There you are, wanting something from your partner, and it's not happening tonight. Life is difficult. You know, you walk out, you see that the kids left the dishes in the sink. They were supposed to do them. They promised they would do them. You let them use your car last night because they said they would do them. And they didn't do them. All right? How's life difficult? You can think of how life's difficult for them. All right? It's a really powerful practice. And it brings it right down to earth. And, you know, for me, it's actually been very, very powerful to play with this practice, including retrospectively. That's another way you can do it. You can think back on a wrangle with someone, issues raising a child, issues in relationships, in your own upbringing. You know, your parents weren't the best parents in the world, you know, my own included. All right, how was life difficult for them? Or how was life difficult for someone who really bugged you 10 years ago? You know, that's worth also looking at retrospectively. Not to let them off the moral hook, but to see the truth in a bigger, broader way. Which goes to the proper translation of the word noble, which you may have heard me speak of. The proper translation of the word noble in the Buddha's construction of the four so-called noble truths. Recent scholarship has shown that probably a better translation in English of the word noble is ennobling. That encountering these truths and engaging them in one's own personal practice and the immediacy of one's practice is actually ennobling. That it lifts us. It transports us. Ultimately, it helps us transcend to feel ennobled by the truth of suffering, the truth of dukkha, the truth of the wobbly grinding, the truth of the difficulty in living. It's not all of living, but it's an important aspect of living. And there's something that happens when we really open our heart to the suffering in the other. There's something ennobling about that. We soften, we become more compassionate, we become more elevated, we're more able to deal with them. There's also something ennobling when we tell the truth about and admit with dignity our own difficulties, our own suffering, without defense or diminishment. The whole of the Dharma begins with the first ennobling truth. It's the one people tend to want to not talk about or look at. It's definitely the one that I resisted facing for a long time. And so I really forced myself in my practice to really engage it. What is suffering? What is the suffering in life? What is inherent? What is not inherent? And how can an engagement with the difficulty of living in one's own place and in the place of others be actually ennobling? Actually liberating. That's our opportunity every day, and it's right in front of our nose, isn't it? Let's let this sit a minute here, and then we'll wrap up. You might ask yourself in a felt way, what would it be like to relate to the difficulties in living, to relate to suffering in a way that is ennobling? In other words, what would it feel like in the body? What might be a kind of orientation to it that would feel ennobling? How might it feel ennobling to relate to the ways that others are aggravating, that sees how life is difficult for them? How could we orient to that in a way that would be authentically ennobling over here? Thich Nhat Hanh has language like, you know, I see that you are suffering, my dear, and I wish you weren't. You know, almost as if you can imagine reaching out your hand in some sense to someone who is an adversary or a difficulty for you, and just touching that person on the cheek, if imagining the appropriateness of it, the cheek or the heart, and saying, I feel your suffering. I know that life is difficult for you, and I wish it weren't. Including my part of life being difficult for you. May you let yourself be ennobled by the great truth of suffering.